What will you be? Korean-American singer-songwriter Priscilla Ahn, with the question that so many of us remember being asked, and perhaps you're still asking yourself that very question. What will I be? What will I do when I grow up? Perhaps you had the answer when you were very young. Some people just know. We were talking this morning about astronaut Christopher Hadfield, who just knew he wanted to get in space from an early age. Some argue we should rethink how we ask that question and when we ask it too. We often leave careers education to fairly late in high school when students are picking their final subjects. You might have kids in that situation right now, angsting over what they should do, where they might end up. Should we be thinking about it a whole lot early as primary school? Perhaps. This has certainly got you all hot under the collar on our Facebook page. For the past 4 years, Professor Jenny Gore has led a very interesting study that's encompassed some of the least wealthy and the wealthiest schools in New South Wales. She's been looking at how career aspirations are formed and how to ensure they're not limited before children get off the ground. She's the director of the Teachers and Teaching Research Program at the University of Newcastle. And she joins us in the Newcastle ABC studios. Good morning to you, Jenny.
Good morning, Natasha.
Two enduring assumptions have been challenged in this research. Let's cut to the chase. What are they?
The first is that students from low socioeconomic status backgrounds have lower career aspirations than their peers. And the second is that younger students have relatively underdeveloped aspirations, that they really don't know what they want to do or be.
Let's take
And we found that both of these were flawed assumptions.
We often think that kids sort of fantasise about what they might be, but it's not necessarily a serious imagining.
It's interesting. There's a whole lot of research that talks about the fantasy occupations of young people. Hmm. And sometimes they say, you know, for instance, we have this one student in year six from a very poor school, poor background. He's doing well at school. And he's really clear that he wants to study economics and law, become a lawyer and a barrister, work his way up through federal parliament and become prime minister.
He's now, even mapped out the path.
He has. He knows exactly what he's doing. And whether that's a fantasy or not, I mean, who are we to say? So there's that issue. But the other issue is that I think when people talk about fantasy careers, we have only two children out of our 3,000 in this sort of second year of the study where we're reporting on some of the data. Mm. Only two of them named things they want to be that are not real things. One wanted to be a superhero and one wanted to be king of the world.
Oh, and can we possibly deny them those career paths? I hope not. What have you been doing in this study? Let's just get a sense of the bones of who you're tracking over time and what year levels they are.
Yep. So we're working with around 80 public schools. They're all public schools, and we should qualify what you said earlier to say that while it's some of the wealthiest public schools in New South Wales. So about 80 schools. We're tracking around about 3,000 students through 4 years of school. So by the end of the study, we'll have survey responses from students from year three right through to year 12, as well as their parents and carers, as well as some of their teachers. And we're also doing focus groups and interviews with some of the students' parents and teachers. So it's in the end, we're going to have a sample of about 12,000 surveys with New South Wales public school children and, other numbers. But we've already, for instance, conducted focus groups with nearly 600 students. So we've got lots of really rich qualitative data as well as the numbers.
So you're halfway through. I got that slightly wrong at the top. But what are you asking them?
We're asking them a range of things, but I think the question that really pertains to your show today is what would you like to do when you leave school? Where do you see yourself in the future? And how do you plan to get there?
Why are you asking them that question, though?
Well, one of the other parts of it is why they want to do what they want to do. And I think that's the really interesting question. Mm. The reason we're doing this is because a lot of the research that's been done on students' aspirations has been based on the upper secondary years. So we're asking kids when they're in about year 10, you know, in particular, that's when the research is done. And what we're finding is that kids' aspirations are formed much earlier. And our study is just designed to understand the complexity of the formation of aspirations. And it goes back to the assumptions that we were testing. You know, we were in many ways surprised to find that the aspirations of younger students are really very similar to those of students in the upper part of the high school in terms of the specific occupations they were naming, the prestige levels of the occupations they were naming, and indeed the reasons for wanting to do those kinds of jobs. They were surprisingly similar.
Well, that does interest me, because when we're very little, all sorts of things influence us, but we don't have a sense of the scope of possibility.
That's right. And I think when we're talking about working with children in primary schools on thinking about their futures, it's not about trying to quickly push them into a narrow set of career pathways. It's much more about having conversations with young people about what work looks like, what different kinds of functions and purposes are served by different kinds of work. I mean, one of the interesting things we've found is that a lot of girls are motivated by altruism. They're really interested in doing things that will make a difference, that will make the world a better place. And yet we know that very few girls choose engineering at university level, for instance. But if girls were to understand the altruistic components of engineering work, it might make that a more attractive career for them. So it's not about trying to push kids into careers. It's about opening up the range of possibilities so that kids can see that different careers, in fact, may be a better fit for them.
Yes, I'm not going to get too hung up on that, but that's certainly what got done to me. The altruistic aspects of engineering were promoted to us as girls, and the reality was quite different in the degree program. But that's another argument. So you are advocating, on the basis of your research, that we take the conversations that kids have about careers and jobs and aspirations seriously, and we engage with them much earlier than year 10, which is where a lot of careers education conventionally happens in school.
Yeah, I think it is important to have those conversations early with young people, just to get them thinking about the possibilities. Again, absolutely not to narrow them down to one or two choices. There are young people who do know what they want to do, like our young aspiring Prime Minister. I knew that I always wanted to be a teacher, for instance. But there are other people who have no idea, who have no idea when they're in year 10 or 11, indeed. About 8% of our whole sample don't know what they want to do, and that's the same whether they're in year 3 or in year 10 or 11.
And isn't that okay? This
Absolutely.
Idea of talking to children about jobs and careers in primary school has a lot of parents blanching, certainly on our Facebook page, that children should just be left to be free-form in play rather than thinking about the burden of a career.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think it's really important that we don't try and push kids into early decisions. It's more about helping them just to understand what careers are out there, what possibilities exist. So not in a kind of a forced, formal careers education way. It's interesting how many young people really don't know what a university is. Mm. They don't know what you do at university. They don't know what TAFE is. So it's more about opening up the possibilities and the pathways. And I think recognising that, you know, there are so many different pathways into careers as well. So it's not about having to make a choice and that be, you know, what you do for the rest of your life. Increasingly, that's not the case, as we know.
Is your sense, Jenny Gore, that if those conversations aren't had, then some children miss out on opportunities that could have been afforded to them?
I think that's right. And that's our real interest, is to increase equity, give more kids more opportunities by opening up this range of possibilities and having those kinds of conversations. There's another notion in the literature called circumscription, and it's about how people narrow the range of possibilities for them. And we're interested in when that happens. One thing that's been really interesting is that it's our highest socioeconomic status background kids who really circumscribe their choices. Basically, you know, not going to university is not an option for them. And in many cases, they're either going to be a doctor or a lawyer, and anything else is seen to be inappropriate in their particular circumstances. And that's also narrow. So it's not just about the kids at the other end of the spectrum in terms of socioeconomic status. We found that, in fact, it's the students at the upper end of the affluence scale, if you like, who are even more tentative about their careers, though, in some cases. And I think that's because the range of possibilities is more open to them. They can make choices. They can take their time making choices. They can have their gap years. They can, not stress about a future in the same way, perhaps, that some of our lower SES students are worried about what they need to do. Interestingly, money was talked about as a motivation more among lower SES students than among the higher socioeconomic status.
So those
group.
Children in poor, in less wealthy public schools focused a little more on the money outcomes of a career path?
A little more.
And you can understand why
absolutely.
That might be.
Yes, yes. What we found that was particularly interesting, though, was that prior achievement is the biggest signifier of the differences in the way that young people talk about their aspirations. So while we talk a lot about socioeconomic status, and there's been a whole push in universities to raise aspirations and have more young people coming into university, certainly in the previous government, this was a very strong push. Interestingly, it's not so much about raising aspirations, because we found that all groups of kids have, in fact, fairly high aspirations as measured on occupational prestige scales. It's more about maintaining those aspirations. And one way of doing that is ensuring that they're achieving at school. So the issue of achievement becomes a very important one.
Professor Jenny Gore is with us this morning. She's the director of the Teachers and Teaching Research Program at the University of Newcastle. She's involved in very interesting research tracking children from primary school through to high school, looking at their aspirations, career aspirations. So you've looked at lower and higher socioeconomic kids in the 80 schools that you're surveying and doing focus groups with. What about gender? And
yes.
other factors, age
yep, so about,
too.
Yes, so about half of our sample is male and half is female. We're also looking at age very much, so the different year levels and the age at which students are talking about different issues, although as we've found, it's very similar across the age groups. Gender does distinguish more. We're finding, for instance, that girls and boys have different reasons for their career choices, and the kinds of occupations they're talking about are different as well. So despite all the kind of feminist push that girls can do anything and that kind of challenge, I guess, that our society has met by raising aspirations for women in all kinds of ways, it's interesting how gendered the occupational choices remain for young people. We also looked at location. So we're comparing metropolitan and provincial or rural students, because our sample actually extends from North Sydney right up to the Queensland border.
And that's a vital comparison to make, isn't it? Because kids know in more remote and regional communities that they might have to move away, and that's a big step to take to pursue a career, a livelihood.
It is, and from some of the focus group data, we're really getting some insight into the challenges that poses for young people and their families.
You're a mother of two daughters, as it happens. And I wonder whether this work is starting to make you think differently about the sorts of conversations you have with your kids compared to your own experiences of careers education at school.
Yeah, it is all very interesting when you're a parent and you're doing this kind of this kind of work. I was one of those people who always wanted to teach, and I don't remember much in the way of careers education, except perhaps filling in some form that, I plugged in my interests and it told me what I ought to be, and I can't remember what the answer was. I do remember a Year 11 teacher saying it would be a waste for me to be a teacher. and been quite outraged by that. My mother was a teacher, my grandmother was a teacher, my brother was a teacher. And so, of course, I had to become a teacher. That was kind of straightforward for me. And maybe, back then, I'm starting to sound very old, but back then maybe there were fewer choices, or perhaps I really was just passionate about making a difference through teaching. And I still am in a way. And even though I'm now a professor, it's still about education and it's about working with teachers to do better in schools. But with my own children, one was always pretty sure that she was interested in medicine and is pursuing that kind of a pathway. The other one's in year 11 and is less sure about her future. All she knows at the moment is that she's quite passionate about her music. Out of the blue, as a primary school child, she wanted to learn the violin, changed to saxophone, changed to cello. Ah. It's a bit like the way people change careers, and she loves the cello and is very successful with it and would love to pursue that. But even for her, I think, and even with the kind of family background and resources that we have, thinking about what possibilities are actually open to her as a young musician. I don't even know that much about that. So I wonder about what support lots of young people have in their various family situations for thinking through the range of possibilities and how to get there.
Well, what you're advocating for is much earlier conversations at school and not conversations that burden children. Jenny Gore, thank you so much for teasing out this research with us. We might have to check in with you again at the end of the 4 years.
It was my pleasure. I thought you'd be interested in one student who said they wanted to be a radio announcer because I want to talk about stuff that matters to people.
Bring it on. I expect them to be behind this mic in 10 years' time.
Exactly.
There you go.
Thanks so much,
present
Natasha.
That challenge to them. Jenny Gore, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
From the University of Newcastle, Louise has written on our Facebook page, amongst many of you who are commenting on this issue, no, why crush kids' options and choices so early in life? This is in response to my question about whether you should careers counsel primary school students. I was told, she says, by a careers counsellor at high school that I was too dumb to do what I wanted to do, and that really detailed my education and career. I went on to do jobs that I could do. Thankfully, I eventually wised up, pursued my dream, and have been working in that field since my mid-20s, but fear of being too dumb did halt my education. So it's taken me a long time to qualify in my profession. And she goes on. So thank you very much. Let's let kids keep their dreams and hopes and let them keep working towards them, is Louise. But of course, I think Jenny would agree with that. And it's about helping kids along the way. Keep the conversation going on our Facebook page. Life Matters is where you are across the nation on ABC RN. Natasha Mitchell with you this morning. We're talking sex drive next. It's a myth.